she seemed really genuine to me. Like, it seemed like she's not just trying to insert herself. I mean, again, you know, we sought her out. She didn't come seek us out, and she was really willing to talk about everything. And it's an interesting story. I mean, it seems like, I guess it's just another piece, and we'll have to, you know, I'll be interested to talk to her again, just to get, you know, a few more details from her. But from first talking to her, you know, I think it's something to look into, that's for sure. And so that's why she, you know, all those years ago, sort of, you know, came forward with it and didn't necessarily get the response she thought she was going to get. And I think she just kind of has let it go until we stumbled across some postings that she had put up and reached out to her. And again, she was more than happy to talk to us. So I don't know. I'm not sure exactly what to make of it, to be honest with you.
I mean, out of all the people that we've talked to so far, I mean, I feel like we were able to verify more of this person, if not, you know, the story itself. Obviously, we, you know, 11 years later can't verify, you know, what she saw. But as far as if we're verifying the person, I feel like we've been able to verify more about her than any of the other people so far that we've talked to.
Yeah, the one thing I'm not worried about is her as far as who she's claiming to be and what she's claiming, where she's claiming to live and all that kind of stuff. That stuff's 100%. Like, it's locked in. From there, that's why I think it's something to consider. I don't think it's something that we sit here and rest the whole case on. You know, right after I got off the phone with her, and the first thing that runs through my mind is, are we getting played here or is this real? And so then when, you know, and now even as I'm talking to you a little bit, a few minutes more after that, start to see that I don't think she's making this up at all, and I don't think the other people are either. And I think at some point, maybe they're not all Jennifer. Maybe they didn't all happen to see her, but I don't think that we're getting a bunch of people coming forward just making stuff up. I think we're talking to some people that believe they saw something, and maybe they didn't. I think we have to take it seriously in that respect. You know, we can't pick and choose what we think is real and what we don't think is real because we weren't there. And so, yes, eyewitness testimony, I think if you're looking for, like, super detailed stuff, like you're trying to get eyewitness testimony on some little tiny details, it's probably not real accurate. But I think in a larger scale and in a larger sense of seeing a person in a certain place in a certain time, I think it's probably more reliable than, you know, most people would maybe like to think it is.
...24-year-old Jennifer Kesey disappeared January 24th, 2006. She was last seen at her condo on Conroy Road.
We're going to solve a missing persons case, which has haunted Orlando investigators.
So we're still waiting for that one person to come through with the one bit of information that could bring Jennifer home.
This is Unconcluded, a real-time investigative podcast looking into the 2006 disappearance of Jennifer Kesey in Orlando, Florida. I'm your host, Sean Gerd. Last episode, we touched on the known possible suspects in Jennifer's disappearance. But we did so while continuing to investigate other tips and leads that we've received. And in this episode, we're going to consider one of those leads. One that we've been investigating for several weeks now. At noon on January 24th, 2006, the day Jennifer was reported missing, her car was parked at the Huntington on the Green condominium complex, just 1 2/10 miles down the road that Jennifer lived on. And as you know, the person who parked her car was captured on video, leaving the car and walking away past the pool. We've discussed this at length over the course of this podcast. But one of the obvious questions that stems from this event is how no one at the Huntington on the Green has ever come forward saying that they saw anything around the time of Jennifer's disappearance. Other than the person who originally alerted authorities to the presence of Jennifer's car on the morning of January 26th, there's been almost complete silence, which would just indicate that there was no one that saw anything. And really, that just doesn't seem likely. Over the past several months, we've spent time at the Huntington on the Green, and every single time that we've been there, there have been people out and about on the sidewalks, in the parking lot, outside their doors. I've believed since my very first visit to the place Jennifer's car was dumped that there are people who saw things that we've never known. We've also heard from Joyce Kessie in earlier episodes of this podcast saying that she believes that there are others who saw things too. And over the last few weeks, we've started to learn that those thoughts are proving true. We've located someone who we know lived at the Huntington on the Green in January of 2006, who says she did see something right around the time of Jennifer's disappearance. And so for the first time since the events 11 years ago, it's time to hear about it.
Let me see. I was working for DCS, and that day I got out of work early. So I went to the supermarket, and I hardly ever used to be around my parking lot area because I live right there on Huntington on the Green where the car was found. So I got home early that day. I was taking out some, bags out of my trunk, and then I see this girl coming to me. Hi, how you doing? Wanting to talk to me and all that stuff. And then she was with a guy, and then the guy, rushed her off, since she left, I ignored, said hello, and I kept on walking. But then I remember the face, and I remember the look the look he gave her because she wanted to talk to me, but they left on going, and I went. And then the next morning, I hear I'm watching the news. They said that she was missing, and then I remember that conversation. I didn't remember that one, I knew something had happened, but then about a week later or so, I said, wait a minute. I remember that, seeing that girl. I remember seeing that girl. And that happened, that was around, I think that was around 3:15, between 3 and 3:30, because I had gotten out of work early that day. So that was between 3 and 3:30 in the afternoon. I used to work all the way in Sumter County.
Before we go further, there's some things we need to consider with this particular statement. A lot of things, in fact. But let's start with this. After sharing her story with someone close to this case, she said she was told not to worry about it. So even years later, when she finally decided to speak up, she'd never actually talked with investigators because she was told that she'd seen someone else.
And then when I put the information on the, on the internet, I didn't get any callbacks or anything like that. And then a couple of years, later, now just recently that I was at UCF, and I told her about, what I had seen, and she told me, it was they had found out that it was some type of a prostitute or something that lived in the area. But I always thought it was weird because I had never seen that girl there before, and I've been living here since 2001. And then she told me I told her my information, and then later on she said that she spoke to somebody and they said that it was a prostitute from the area. So she said that they didn't think it was her. I just left it like that. The only thing I always thought was I never seen that girl before, so from the area, and I've been living here for a long time, so that was about it.
So did she see a lookalike prostitute and not Jennifer Kessie? We've already mentioned previously that this was a bit of a problem back in 2006. But since then, I believe I've determined the identity of this prostitute. And while Jennifer and her do share some physical features, in my opinion, they aren't as similar as I expected them to be. And even Jennifer's mom made a similar comment to that on our Facebook group. Also, I spoke with the person who told her not to really worry about it because it was probably a prostitute. But the thing is, that person doesn't really remember telling her that. Even more, on top of all of that, after being told that the person she saw probably wasn't Jennifer, she is still completely 100% sure that the person she saw was, in fact, Jennifer.
But at that moment, when that happened, I was 100% sure it was her, but they told me that it wasn't. And then, it's been 10, 11 years. And I'm still sure it was her, but then since, my lookalike, but at that time I was 100% sure that it was her.
Let's consider that this person did in fact see Jennifer. That would place her at the Huntington on the Green on the afternoon of January 24, 2006, after her car was parked at the same location. This would mean that Jennifer is at the Huntington on the Green about the same time her parents are arriving at the Mosaic at Millennia. To be quite honest, I've had a hard time trying to figure out how this can make sense, and I just want to make the assumption that it's not Jennifer. But at the same time, I have nothing to base that on, other than my gut just saying it couldn't be. Regardless, we needed to press for some more information.
You know, and but I remember what the guy looked like. You know, I remember what he looked like. I remember her. You know, she had, you know, I remember her, and I remember what the guy looked like. And so, like, in, you know, I remember what he looked like. He looked like a Spanish-type, Indian-looking, like, dark skin, not black. You know, like a dark-skin, Indian-type, Hispanic-looking type. You know, it was like a, it looked like a combination of both. That's, and I don't know how that's describing it correctly. But I remember what he looked like, and he had a ponytail, and he had, like, a strict face. You know, very, like, firm, strict face, and that's, you know, about all I can remember. It seems like he had, like, a long face. And I think his clothes were baggy. And I, you know, I know they were dark color clothes. You know, probably like maybe like a dark blue or something like that. I know they were dark color, but they were baggy. You know, because I, he looked like, you know, like those people that wear those loose clothes, something like that. I would guess that he would be like in between, I don't know, between 25 and 30, 32, somewhere around there. You know, late 20s, early 30s. I know. I remember she was very pretty. She had blonde hair, and her hair was tied up in a bun. And she was wearing a light-colored T-shirt and jeans. I don't remember exactly how light it was. You know, the shirt, I don't remember what color it was, but it was a light-colored T-shirt and jeans. But she was wearing a ponytail.
Okay. Yeah. How tall would you say the woman was that you saw?
Well, I'm 5'4". She was taller than me. I'm 5'4", and she was taller than me. Yeah, I know she, I think, I'm not, I don't remember, but I don't think she was wearing shoes. I think she was wearing sneakers or something. I, you know, that's not, I didn't catch that, but I know she was taller than me. Her eyes, you know, the way she looked at me, hi, how you doing? It's like she wanted to start a conversation. And every time I look at her picture, I said, those were the eyes. You know, the eyes, like the, you know, the eyebrows shape and all that stuff. I always remember her look. Hi, how you doing? Wanting to talk to me. And I felt bad the next day because, oh, my God, I should have talked to her. But then my friends told me, but if you would have talked and if it was her, then you might have been in danger. So I was like, okay, maybe I'm okay that I didn't speak to her. So I'm not sure, you know, so, but I feel guilty about that sometimes.
Did you ever see this individual ever again in all the time that you've lived at Huntington on the Green? Have you ever seen this
No.
woman?
No, I've never seen her again, and I never saw him again. And I'm, you know, every time, you know, sometimes I'll look around and I, you know, I see people, but then I've never seen them before. I've never seen them before, and I never saw them after. You know, so, you know, and I live behind, you know, where the car was found. I live on the opposite side where there is no access to the, you know, there's no vision to the parking lot. You know, I live like inside, so there would be no side of the parking lot.
We also took the opportunity to clarify again when she believed that this happened and why she had never called the police in the beginning, even though she had realized that the person she saw was now missing.
It was the day before it was reported. In the morning, that's when I heard the news. So I saw them the day before. I remember what the exact date was, but it was the day before because in the morning when I woke up, you know, in the morning when I woke up, I heard the news and I remember seeing them, but I just left it like that. And I just left it like that. And my friends, I think, told me, you know, don't get involved. So I didn't say anything. You know, then later on, I started looking at the news and I see the websites and I saw people like actually, you know, really looking into it. So that's when after, you know, that I decided to talk about it. But before that, everybody was telling me not to get involved.
This witness, who has no reason to make anything up, is 100% sure the person that she saw on TV, Jennifer Kessie, is the same person she saw at her condo complex. So it has to be considered a relevant lead. She never spoke to law enforcement because of not only what she shared here, but she later told me that her ex-husband told her not to get involved because it would not only put her in danger, but also her young children. And as much as I want to say that it doesn't seem likely that it was Jennifer, there's so many things in this case that just don't make sense. I believe that this person, her name is Flo, by the way, did in fact see a pretty blonde girl and a ponytailed Hispanic man on January 24th. But was it Jennifer Kessie? Scott and I went back and forth about it for what seemed like an hour.
Is it likely? I don't know. I would lean towards it not being likely, but there's a lot of things in this case that seem unlikely that, you know, we've sort of had to backtrack on or keep reevaluating. And I think, again, I think this encounter happened, put it that way. I believe her. I really do. I believe that she encountered somebody, whether it was Jennifer or not, with a man, and they weren't, this interaction was not caught on any camera because of where it was located in the apartment complex. So yes, I believe that she encountered this person. Do I think it was possible it was Jennifer? I'm not so sold on that. Just based on the logistics of everything and how it would have to go down as far as the car and the timing and all that kind of stuff, just doesn't make as much sense. You know, based on the time that she saw them, it would have been a few hours after the car was dropped off. So it's possible. It doesn't seem as likely, just because if somebody was really pulling off this crime that ended up where there's almost no evidence, the fact that they had Jennifer with them three and a half hours after the car was parked at Huntington on the Green and only one person got out, you know, I think it's that creates an issue of whether people are going to believe that Jennifer was there and whether we believe, you know, I believe she saw somebody. I fully believe that, but I don't know if it was Jennifer or not based on the timing and the logistics of everything.
I mean, what are the chances, though, that on the day Jennifer goes missing, at the place where her car is dropped off, someone thinks that they see her? Like, the location has a connection to her disappearance already. And then we're talking about on the same exact day that she goes missing. It seems really, really crazy that there would be someone at that apartment complex that someone would see and say for 100% sure that it's Jennifer, and then that person not be Jennifer with all of those other coincidences too. I don't know. It just seems crazy.
Yeah, it's the first one where we've had a direct connection to a location that was a known part of this crime. And so, yeah, I agree. I totally agree that it makes me stop and think. It makes me keep thinking about this, and it makes me keep wondering, you know, what if she had called the police that day? What if she had acted? And part of me doesn't blame her for not, in a way, because of the area that it's located in, the possible reprisal, if that was somebody in that area that was an important person in that neighborhood and you mess with them and, you know, things don't go well for you. So I understand that, you know, we don't know what it was like to be her that day. But I also believe that because of all the ties to it, at some point you have to start looking at it by breaking down just the evidence and is it statistically possible? Yes, because of the timing, everything sort of matches up. So I don't know. I'm stuck on this one. This one keeps coming back to me just because the fact that it is at Huntington on the Green and the timing of it, her car was there, the way the girl reacted and stuff, I don't know. Doesn't seem, there's a few things that still don't seem to make sense with all of it. So I think we just have to, you know, tread lightly with it.
If Flo saw Jennifer Kessie at her condo complex on January 24th, 2006, surely others did too, and we need them to speak up. We need to corroborate this story if we're going to be able to definitively say that Jennifer Kessie was at this location between 3 and 3:30 p.m. If you're listening to this, and you saw a blonde girl and a Hispanic man with a ponytail at the Huntington on the Green around January of 2006, we need to hear from you. Even if you don't think that girl was Jennifer Kessie, please get in touch. Now, while we're discussing events from the Huntington on the Green, there's something else that we need to talk about too. The height of the person of interest. We've previously mentioned that the FBI determined that the POI was between 5 foot 3 inches and 5 foot 5 inches. We've also talked to Jennifer's mom, Joyce, who's on record as saying that she believes those numbers are incorrect because she would have been able to overpower such a person. But up until this point, we had to take the FBI's calculation at face value. However, as I was looking for something else, I came across an interview that Drew Kessie, Jennifer's dad, did on CNN. Now, the interview is asking a question about a person who is already in jail for attempted murder, and a suspect in another high-profile Orlando disappearance. We'll actually discuss this person a little bit more in a future episode, but this specific question referenced this individual being taller than the determined 5'3 to 5'5 height of the POI. Drew's response here is important, because it mentions something that I'd never seen before. He replied to the question by saying, "Well, we've had a bit of a problem with the height of our suspect all along. It was actually three different heights that came out, and the investigators, to my knowledge, decided to go with the FBI's. But we had ranges right up to 5'10", 5'11", from other law enforcement agencies, as well as news agencies too. Let's throw away the height, because it could be different now. It just could be different." When we consider that statement by Jennifer's father, which is the exact opposite of what I'd seen printed elsewhere, that all of the law enforcement and media had agreed upon the height of the POI, well, it just makes that measurement hold a lot less weight. But if we also add to that the possibility that the POI was a teenager in 2006, as we heard Jennifer's mom and others allude to, that person wouldn't still be the height anyways. So I'm not sure it's wise to consider this piece of information at all 11 years later. But let's not stop there. I've also been told from a source that I consider to be very reliable that the front seat in Jennifer's car was pushed all the way back when it was discovered at the Huntington on the Green, which has obvious implications. Sure, the person of interest could have pushed it back while they were wiping down the car. They could have pushed it back to throw off investigators, but the easiest explanation is that they pushed it back to drive the car, which means a 5'3" POI wouldn't be likely. When we put all of this together, other law enforcement agencies calculating a height up to 5'11", the possibility that the POI is taller now than in 2006, and the seat in Jennifer's car being pushed back, I agree with Drew Kessie's last statement. It's time to throw away the height. Everything keeps coming back to the person of interest, mostly because that is really the only confirmed evidence that exists in this case, at all. But as we go along, it's almost like we know less about the POI now than we did in the beginning. Two steps backward for every one step forward. But that's what this case needs. Let's go back for a moment to the witness from the Huntington on the Green. We aren't done with this story, and the possible events that took place at this location around the time of Jennifer's disappearance. But we wanted to share it with you. We've said all along that your involvement is what can make a difference. And to that end, I just wanted to give you an update from an earlier episode. Lisa, the woman who believes she saw Jennifer in a Tennessee jewelry store, has finally had a chance to speak with the FBI, and we can now say that the professionals have had a chance to vet her story. So if anything else, even if it wasn't Jennifer, at least they're looking into it. Remember, if you think you may know something about this case, about the disappearance of Jennifer Kesey, the time to come forward is right now. Call the Orlando Police Department and ask to speak to the detectives that are working this case. 321-235-5300. And don't give up until you talk to them. We'll be back next week with our follow-up sidebar episode, and we do want to thank those of you who have already been part of those. And if you haven't had the chance yet, we'd love to hear from you. You can submit comments, theories, questions, or anything that you want to talk about. You can get in touch on voicemail, email, or social media. Just head on over to unconcluded.com for all of those links. Also, our Facebook discussion group has continued to grow. Come join the thousands of others that are helping us search for answers. And Scott and I love to participate too. Having a community of people who are keeping this story alive, willing to talk about this case, and the efforts to finally find answers, it's something that you should be a part of. We also want to make you aware of a couple other things that we have going on. Scott and I spent a lot of time in Orlando over the past couple weeks, following up on some other tips and leads, but also traveling the possible routes in and around the events of this case. And we're working on a map to put on unconcluded.com. And as we previously mentioned, we do have an updated timeline on the website, but we're also going to add a list of people who have been involved in the podcast so far, people that you've heard from or that you've heard about. So look for that in the coming weeks. Don't forget that you can help this podcast by subscribing, rating, and reviewing. Also, share it with a friend. The more people that know about this podcast know about Jennifer Kesey and can help find answers. Awareness is key to this whole thing. Help us make everyone aware. Before we go, we wanted to share another podcast with you. Many of you may have already heard of it. It's called Insight. Charlie and Allie bring mysterious and unsolved crimes into clear sight. In fact, they even had an episode on Jennifer Kesey you may want to check out. Stick around until the end of the outro to hear their promo. Music in this episode is by PC3. We'll see you next week.
Hi, guys. This is Charlie from the Insight Podcast.
And this is Ali, two hosts from Two Continents.
Every week, we cover a new case from unsolved mysteries to forgotten history to crimes that changed or challenged our legal system in some way.
To get to know us and our podcast better, we recommend our episodes on Jean Spangler, Nicholas Barclay, the missing kid at the center of the documentary The Imposter, and Alison Baden Clay.
New episodes go up every Monday.
You can find us on iTunes and pretty much every other podcast. Podcast app.